When Dora Lee asked me about doing the talk, I was completely shocked. I mean, really shocked. I didn't see that coming at all. And I thought, what would I have to talk about? I'm brand new. I literally walked in here a year and a half ago with no background. I'd never heard the word Zendo before. I'd never done bows or prostrations or chanted like we did. I'd never heard the word Zazen. Until a year and a half ago, and I'm still a real newbie. But when I thought about the title of this talk, a way-seeking mind talk, and I thought, oh, I can talk about that. I have a way-seeking mind. So, in preparation for this, I've been doing what Dora Lee said in her introduction. Just an aside, Jim a few weeks ago sent me an email asking about an introduction or a bio for the website, which I never responded to. And then recently, Dora Lee asked me about how to introduce me. I have nothing to say. I mean, I don't know how you would introduce me. I don't know. Maybe after I talk tonight, you'll know how you would introduce me. But I just don't really have a background that seemed like it made sense in an introduction, but the introduction you came up with was perfect. And you haven't heard this talk yet, but when you hear it, you'll understand how perfect your introduction was. So I've been thinking about my journey. I've been looking back at notes and books and things that I highlighted, and various teachers and authors have been really important to me through the years. So I'll share a few quotes with you because I think I'm not a person who writes, but I think that when you hear the quotes that have been most important to me, that will help you know what was going in my mind and in my heart at different times in my life. So when I think about my relationship with the divine, and right now at this point in my life, I'm most comfortable with saying the divine, the ultimate mystery, maybe Buddha nature or even Christ consciousness. So I come, or the mind of Christ, I come, Christian background. And God used to be the word that I would use. And when I talk about the past, I'll probably say that because it's hard to talk about that time in my life. But that's not the term I would use now. It's kind of mixed up with a lot of different things. Although I think there are some Christians who use the word God and they're sort of pointing the same direction that I am when I say the divine or the ultimate. Anyway, when I think about that relationship, I think of connection. My connection to the ultimate. I think about flow and movement and interaction. And, just this great mystery that we kind of all live in. I like images more than words. And a few years ago, in a group, a small sharing group that I was in, we were talking about images for the divine and how we live with the divine. And one that was really working for me is this idea of this great expanse of water. Maybe it could be an ocean, but the idea that the divine is surrounding us all the time, but in us too at the same time, flowing through me and out of me intentionally to other living beings. And so I think of this idea that at times in my life, I've had really deep dives into this body of water. Times where I've been so deep that I'm like becoming a creature of the water. It's just who I am, and I'm there, and I'm just noticing the presence of the divine all the time, really intently, very aware and awake. And sometimes those moments are like momentary in prayer or meditation or maybe on a retreat for a few days. One time, I'll never forget it. It's been a while ago now. I had this time period for a few days where I just didn't sort of lose the connection. I was kind of walking around in my everyday world without forgetting about God, the ultimate. I don't know why, But I remember walking around school and just kind of being aware that I was in the presence of this great mystery. And I remember walking into someone's office and looking and thinking, oh, this is Christ. That was my language at the time. This is the divine right here in front of me. And I don't know why that happened for me. It hasn't really happened since, but it was really great. But most of my life has not been like deep diving in the divine. It's been more of, I was thinking of it as swimming. You know, I'm there. When I'm swimming, I'm attending services. I'm reading good books. I'm spending time in prayer and meditation. I'm having a private practice. I'm thinking about that relationship and how it affects the way that I interact with other people. And sometimes there'll be periods where it's a part of every day. Sometimes it was like once a week. Sometimes longer than that without really thinking about it. And for me, it hasn't been like a linear progression where I've gotten closer and closer and deeper and deeper. It's been more of like, oh, get deep, and then maybe I'll take a little break for a while. And I don't know if that comes from just getting distracted and busy with other things of life. I would say the times when I was least connected were, you know, the teen years and the early adult years. Sometimes I think it's out of fear. Like, what am I getting myself into and where is this going? And I've had enough of this right now and just kind of backing off. So that's where I've been with it. So just to kind of do the history. My fun party fact, you'll never in a million... Oh, I forgot. I wanted to say this. That's why you write notes. All those times when I was sort of really connected, not connected, engaged, not engaged, more engaged than other times, for me, I always felt like it was my choice. I always felt like the divine is right there and that if I would pay attention, I would feel the connection again. I've never had, in Christianity, people talk about things like desolation or God turning away from them. I never have felt to that, and I don't know how that relates to Buddhist teaching. I always felt like if I just decided to be awake, pay attention, spend time, then we would connect again. So. All right, so I was going to say my party fact. You'll never guess where I was born because it doesn't make sense at all, but my dad was in the Air Force, and I was born in Bangkok, Thailand. And it was a crazy time for my mother because there was no base. So she had to give birth in a Thai hospital, and no one spoke English. And when she kind of came to, I wasn't there, and she was scared to death. But she worked through it, and I was fine, and we only lived there a couple of months. We went to Florida. And when I was 2 years old there, my sister was born, and that's it for my family, mom, dad, and my younger sister. We went to Germany. That's where I went to kindergarten. And then we came to California. And I've been right here in Sacramento since my second grade year. It's been here a long time. So if you took Watt Avenue north quite a ways, like to Edison, and turn left, that world, if you know Sacramento, Edison, Marconi, El Camino, Hal, Bell, that was my world. That was where I grew up. That's where I rode my bike. That's where I played. I went to Dyer Kelly Elementary School, Hal Avenue Middle School. It was a very working class. We had a lot of fun. We were happy and we were safe. We didn't know what we didn't have. You know, things that I see today, I never stepped in a real restaurant or got on a plane or anything like that, but I had a good bike and we had a lot of fun. El Camino Baptist Church was a huge part of my childhood. My parents were very, very involved. Mom was in charge of children's worship and vacation Bible school and backyard Bible club and taught Sunday school. She was so involved, she used to fly around to Southern Baptist conventions and teach classes on how to teach Sunday school and children's worship. My dad was in charge of church training. We were into it. It was, and I followed in their footsteps. I ended up teaching the two-year-old class when I was still quite young myself, and we had a whole curriculum and projects and Bible stories. Every Sunday morning, worship, Sunday school, Then we would go out to lunch at a coffee shop with other families, and we'd be back Sunday night, more worship, more church training, which was evening Sunday school. Every Wednesday night, it was choir and Bible study and girls in action and all of these things, and we were up there a lot. I remember being in the kitchen with my mom cleaning things and getting the grape juice ready for communion and all of that. So very, very involved. I really loved the spirituality side of it from a very young age. I loved to pray. I had this super active prayer life. I talked to God a lot. Everything they told you to do in Sunday school, I was super excited about it, and I went home and did it. I liked to read my Bible. I liked to read the stories and think about them and kind of apply them to my life. I didn't know that not everybody did that. That was just what I did. It was part of who I was. And I did feel very close to God and really felt like I had a personal relationship with God. And it's great. I'm not sure how old I was, but there came a time when the literalness of that religion kind of was not working for me so much. I don't know if I was a preteen or a young teen. They started to sort of think, this really doesn't make sense that there's this entity named God who I can talk to, who like cares whether or not I pass my test or whether I have a cold, because that was kind of what we were taught. It was that sort of close. Like he was actually paying attention to every single person and what you needed and what was going on. And it was really a very separate person that I could talk to like a friend. And while I felt the relationship, that part of it was starting to not work so much. And so the first quote I want to share with you is actually from the Bible. And when I heard it in this new way, it was like a light bulb went off. And I think I was kind of an old child, young teen, when I thought about it this way. And I honestly thought at that moment in my life, I had figured everything out. I really did. I was, you know, an arrogant young teenage girl. So this is the verse. It's 1 John 4:7. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is from God. And he who loves is born of God and knows God. And then in verse 16, it says, God is love, and the one who abides in love abides in God and God in him. And my light bulb was, oh, God is love. God's not a being. God is just love. It's not like another person. I'm like, oh, God is like this relationship between people. It's this feeling of love and loving and care. And that's, you know, and it just kind of went there with it. And so when you talk about those early seeds of Buddhism, I think that I was having some Buddhist ideas and thoughts long before I ever knew what Buddhism was. So a few years later, my parents told me they were divorcing. And then a little bit after that, my mother shared that she'd be leaving the church, but that if I wanted to stay involved, she would keep driving me back and forth. To this day, I don't really know if they kicked her out or if she just chose not to come. She did share with me that she had been meeting with the pastor, and he was just kept saying, go back to your husband. And that's kind of all I know about it. I never really found out a whole lot about that. She did share with me at one point that the reason that she got so involved in working with the children was because she didn't want to do the adult things. She never actually sort of bought into the religion and the dogma and the teachings. It was kind of a community thing for her, and the ethics and the values and the morals. But I think I was the only one in my family who was hooked on the spirituality side of it. So for a little bit, I went to some things, but that petered out. I had some friends who were Catholic, and you would, you know, spend the night at their house, and I'd end up going to Catholic services, had a little bit of exposure to Catholicism. I'd always been a great student, people pleaser, get those A's, do the right thing. And my eighth grade year, coincidentally, the year that we quit going to the church and my parents divorced, I decided not to do school. I just didn't do it. You look at that report card, I go from straight A's to D's and F's. I just didn't do it. which meant that my freshman year of high school, when I decided, oh, I'm going to be a student again, well, I was tracked. I was in the lowest possible classes at Encina High School, which, if you know anything about that, those were some pretty low classes. The teachers did things like they read the test to us the day before. I mean, it was just crazy. So that was hard. And I also didn't make some great social decisions that year, and I was really floundering. My Catholic friends had gone to Loretto High School, the all-girls Catholic school, and they were having a very different experience. And I begged my mom to let me go to Loretto. And I don't know how she afforded it or paid for it. I know she went and met with Sister Nora, and somehow they made it happen. My sophomore year, I got to go to Loretto. Changed my life, you know, obviously academically, but also my spiritual life. The head of the theology department was Deacon Charles Cheever. He was the deacon at the church next door, St. Philomene's, and he was one of my teachers. And I did not know it at the time, but he had spent a part of his life as a practicing Buddhist. And he did teach a lot of courses that incorporated Eastern ideas. And this is my first exposure to Eastern religion ideas, and I loved them. And today I can't tell you what we read or what it was about, but I know that I loved them. But even more than the ideas were the practices. We meditated. We chanted. He had a gong. He worked it into the Catholic services that all of the girls went to, but he also did it in class, and he had optional times where you could go in the chapel, like at lunch or things, and do meditations. So I kind of fell in love with those practices. Got involved in the Catholic Youth Organization at St. Philomene's Church. That's where I met my future husband. Eventually, we were together during this time. You know, after high school, we were at UC Santa Barbara a year, and then we transferred to UC Davis. I graduated from there with a degree in human development, and then a little bit later, I got my teaching credential at Sac State, and then my master's at Sac State in administration. During those years of starting our relationship, having our daughter, building a career, was still on and off in relationship with the church, probably more on than a lot of young adults. I taught CCD. I wanted my daughter to have a church. I wanted our children raised in a religion, and I really didn't think it mattered which one. You know, I kind of was in that stage like, well, you need a relationship with God. It really doesn't matter which religion you pick. So his family is very Catholic, so I did the RCIA program in the Catholic Church, which is how an adult becomes Catholic. It was quite meaningful. It was really at a deep faith level. There were retreat opportunities. There was great faith sharing, and it was a good experience for me. So my faith was being deepened in those years through that. And then Red Cheever was also doing like little lecture series, like he did one like on the Buddha and the Christ, that kind of thing. Anything he taught, I knew I was going to love. So I would occasionally go to his classes. So I'm continuing to learn and to grow, and a few opportunities for meditation and things through there. There were a group of people that I knew older than me who had been pretty disillusioned with the Catholic Church, and they sort of quit going to services, and they were doing something they called home church. And they'd been reading Michael J. Fox, I think it was. And yes, you know. And so I joined them, and those were some fabulous liturgical experiences in their home where we did our own readings. They were into inclusivity, the prayer, the chanting, the meditation. So it wasn't like I was thinking about God and church every day. It was really an important part of my life and continuing to grow. We sent our daughter to St. Ignatius School because her cousin was there, and academically it seemed great, and I liked the idea of her having continuing religion. And then when I got my credential, I started teaching there in fourth grade. I've now been there about 33, 34 years, something like that. So never left St. Ignatius. Got involved in that church. A real blessing was when they decided to try to bring Ignatian spirituality to the people in the pews, you know. not just the Catholic dogma, but the special things about Ignatian spirituality. So I did that retreat and did sort of a, you do the exercises from St. Ignatius on your own at home every day, and then meet with a faith sharing group. So there's another growth opportunity there. And we were involved and, you know, went to church every day. We had the pew where we sat with grandma and got donuts afterwards and all of that. So that was going pretty well. I was loving my job, but my marriage was not good. It was pretty highly dysfunctional, getting more and more dysfunctional. I had to stop and think about the years. Around 2006, I think it was, I think we'd been together about 23 years, is when things really finally ended. He was an alcoholic, had some mental health problems. I was also playing a huge role in the dysfunction, not knowing what I was doing. And the way it ended, really, the last marriage counselor we had, the last session we ever had, she had kind of had it, and she said to him, "You need a full psychiatric workup." She said, "I want you to call your doctor today and tell him your marriage therapist says you need this, and make an appointment." And he was at one of those stages. If you've ever lived with an alcoholic, you know it's like this, right? The income level is like this. The emotions are like this. The I'm drinking whatever I want and passing out in the middle of the day, and I promise I'm never going to drink again. Okay, so all over the place. At the moment when she said that, he was in one of those places where he was like, "I know I have a problem and I need help." So he said yes. So I turned to her, being the good girl, and I said, "Okay, I understand that he needs to do that, but what do I need to do?" I said, "I know problems are never one way. What's my homework?" She goes, "You need to read Codependent No More." Like, okay, well, I don't know what a codependent is, but okay, right? But I knew myself a little bit, been doing a lot of introspection, and I kind of understood some problems, but I couldn't really put it all together. So we left that appointment. He called the doctor from the car, made his appointment. We went straight to Tower Books and bought Codependent No More, and that changed my life. I mean, I was a full-blown codependent, which it was like I had internalized this idea that it was my job to take care of everyone, but not just in the way you wanted to be taken care of, in the way that I knew you needed to be taken care of. So this was with my coworkers and my family and my then husband. You know, it was my job was to know what you needed and manipulate you into doing it and giving it to you. So her book just really gave me tools, and I just was on a mission of personal growth. I made some huge changes, just transformed my relationship with my children and my coworkers and everything. Unfortunately, my ex-husband didn't get it, didn't jump on the bandwagon, more and more crises, and eventually completely divorced. So around 2010 or so, I'm now on my own, and he's out of the picture, so that stress is gone. My children are getting pretty old at this point and not needing so much of my time. And obviously, it's a time to re-engage with my spirituality. And I started, you know, just spending more time, personal prayer and thinking and going to church services. And I decided I should find maybe a retreat or something to go to. Looking around online, and I had done some things at Mercy Center Auburn, and they had a retreat by an author I'd never heard of, a book I'd never heard of, but it was good. I bought it. I went on the retreat. First day of the retreat, lo and behold, that teacher, Red Cheever, was there. And he was there not as a teacher, but as a retreatant. So we found time to talk, and I caught him up on what was going on in my life. He had actually performed our wedding ceremony and baptized both children and in and out of my life, and he didn't know the current story. So that was good. End of the retreat, we were in the bookstore, several of us kind of looking at books. And Red was there. And I said, "Well, what do you think I should read?" And he pulls out a book. And he says, "This would probably be good for where you're at right now." And it was Pema Chodron, The Places That Scare You, A Guide to Fearlessness in Difficult Times. Absolutely perfect. Met me right where I was at sort of the end of working through the codependency and just took me to the next level. I think the word in there was Maitri. Is that right? M-I-T-R-I? Maitri, is that how you say it? Which in my memory, I don't have the book anymore because I gave it to someone that I thought needed it. But that was about forgiving yourself. Okay. And she talked a lot about doing that for yourself, which was what I really needed to hear, was one of the healing things I needed. And just all of the ideas were eye-opening. And there were a couple of aspirations that became very, very important to me, and those are things I want to share with you, and they still are very important to me. But one was the idea she had, and maybe this is common in Buddhism, I don't know. It was brand new to me then, it's still very special, but the idea of using the phrase, may I be and become. And I just love that, because I think it captures this idea that we already completely are, we are fully who we are, but we're still becoming. So this is often a part of my morning, to say it really slowly and think about it. May I be and become a person of loving kindness. May I be and become a person of compassion. And then I've got a few more words, and I don't know what was in her original version and what I've added, because I would sort of add ones that were kind of antidotes for my own shadow. So one is, may I be and become a person of sympathetic joy. That was a huge issue for me, and it's where I've had a lot of growth, but I used to really worry about what everyone was thinking of me. Why was everyone going out to dinner and not inviting me? Why wasn't I included? What's going on? Why don't they like me? I've really worked through a lot of that, but sympathetic joy, I could imagine people out having fun and be happy for them, and I kept using that, and it was helpful. Another one, may I be and become a person of humility. I can often get stuck in being judgmental, especially like if someone's not doing their job well. I can get really critical. I can get really tied up in productivity and doing things right. And thinking about humility helped me a lot with working through that one. Another is, may I be and become a person of equanimity. And I'm not still completely sure that I understand exactly what that means, but I know that I was somewhat hooked on the drama of projects and the up and the downs and the stuff that's going on and the excitement, and I've now become a little bit more even keeled. This last one is a newer one for me, and I don't even know if I want it, but I think I should want it. It's, may I be and become a person of steadfastness. I've never been good at like practicing every day, doing what I'm supposed to do every day. I somehow managed to twist those things that I want to do into shoulds, and then I fight against them and don't want to do them. And I don't know where I'm at with this right now. But I think I'm supposed to be more steadfast and sit zazen every morning, and I think that I would like it and it would be good for me, but I'm still not doing it, and I don't know where I am with that. This is a really lovely aspiration that, again, when I heard this, I knew nothing about Soto Zen. I knew nothing at all, but I fell in love with this, and I still use it. May all sentient beings enjoy happiness and the root of happiness. May we be free from suffering and the root of suffering. May we not be separated from the great happiness devoid of suffering. May we dwell in equanimity, free from passion, aggression, and prejudice. And I still just love that and use it often. So, I became more involved with going to Red's classes. He teaches, still teaches, he's about to retire, a monthly class up at Mercy Center Auburn. It's kind of like an all-day Saturday thing. It's called Pathways, and he'll pick three or four books in a year, and you read them and you study them, and it's a cross-section of like all of the religions. And when he's teaching, he'll do a Hebrew chant, and then he'll draw a Chinese character, and then we'll be reading out of the Bible. It's kind of all over the place. But one of the first books that I did with him really, really in depth was called The Rhythm of Being by Ramon Panikkar. Ramon Panikkar just died in like the last 8 to 10 years. He was a Catholic priest and then a Hindu and a Buddhist. I was told that his father was Spanish and that's where he was raised. That's when he became a priest. But his mother was Indian and then he kind of went back and learned about that. Great theologian. He felt that he was all three of these things all at once. So he talks about the cosmotheandric adventure. So that's the cosmos, which is everything that we know and don't know, alive and not alive. The theos, which is whatever you want to call it, God, the ultimate, and the anthropos, meaning the person. So I'm going to read what he says about this. I debated whether or not to share this, but I'm going to do it. Cosmotheandric spirituality allows the glory of existence to flower. We are part of a cosmic venture, a human history, and a divine destiny. We are partners in that symphony, even free players in it. We transcend ourselves, and yet we do so from our very immanence. In other words, we jump outside our little selves by discovering the mystery of reality, the wonder of existence, and at the same moment, by recognizing that we are part of this very mystery, we recognize this all as the very divine, but also very cosmic and human reality. It all comes together in one triple experience. We are in awe, love, astonishment, joy that being is. Reality exists, and the divine is not a dream. We can trust. All of a sudden, we are proud to be alive, called into being, given awareness, freedom, and the grace to witness it all and to co-operate with this very life of the real. So when I read this book, it was just like light bulbs. I loved it. It's hard to read. I had a friend who was very, very smart. She was a lawyer. And we got together once a week and talked about the reading, and she helped me pull it apart and understand it. But again, at this time, I knew nothing of Buddhist ideas or Buddhist thoughts, but you can see that Ramon Panikkar did. And when you hear this prayer that he writes, you'll know that he knows Dogen, even though I didn't know Dogen when I fell in love with this prayer. He wrote, "Gods, angels, and spirits present here and now, human beings and every living thing attending here and now, benches, walls, stones, and sacred places abiding here and now. May my thoughts, words, and deeds be in harmony with the entire universe, contribute to its justice, enhance its beauty, and be spoken in freedom so that peace may draw closer to our world." So that's been an important part of what was then my prayer life. We did a lot of books. We did some Tao. We did the I Ching. For a while, the Upanishads were like a daily thing that I was reading from. We did a book called The Divine Dance by Richard Rohr. Richard Rohr is a Franciscan priest, and he talks about some ideas similar to Panikkar, but from a Christian perspective a little bit. And I really think that when you get to the mystical level of Christianity, Islam, Judaism, you're really kind of pointing, did I already say this, at some of those same ideas that we have in Buddhism. So a shorter quote, but from Richard Rohr. "God refuses to be known except through trustful, loving relationship. You cannot know God with your mind alone, and that's why all teachers of prayer and contemplation are teaching you to let go. So you can go to that deeper, ubiquitous consciousness that we call the mind of Christ. It's really God in you knowing God, which is what real prayer journeys finally teach you. The very nature of God, therefore, is to seek out the deepest possible communion and friendship with every last creature on this earth. What if the very shape of being is, first of all, communion? The very nature of being is love. Being is an active verb, and God is an event of communion. Could it be true? That's what he says. So fell in love with that one too. So they were really helping me come to what I think of as a more adult faith, and planting seeds and ideas that relate to Buddhist thought. There was a year where, again, my church was doing something with the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius. And so I signed up again, and it was still one of those, is an everyday life. So again, you do a reading at home, and you meet with a spiritual director once a week, and you have some larger group things. I was also doing The Art of Living by Thich Nhat Hanh with a small group with Red Cheever. So every morning I read St. Ignatius and Thich Nhat Hanh. It was fabulous. It was a great, great time. And there's some things in Ignatius that I had to kind of put aside and change the words and make it work for me. And staying involved in the Catholic Church for a long time, there was a while where I could make the Mass work. I could hear the words and the language in my own way. And I could ignore some of the words. And I could spend time thinking the thoughts that I thought. But it just got harder and harder to have it be meaningful. And I still work at a Catholic church, and I still go to Mass at least once a month. But it's not a practice that feeds me or that I seek out anymore or I look for. There's too much of it that just doesn't work. So in August of 2021, Red did a retreat called, it was a five-day retreat. It was called The Way of Bodhisattva. I'd never heard the word bodhisattva before. No idea what it was. I knew it had something to do with Buddhism, but I don't know. There were three books to read before the retreat. The Way of the Bodhisattva by Shantideva. Entering the Way of the Bodhisattva, which is a translation and a commentary by David Karma Chopfel. And then Becoming Bodhisattvas by Pema Chodron. So through reading these books and through the retreat, I just fell in love with the Bodhisattva vow. I mean, to me, and still today, it just really encompasses everything about like who I want to be and what I want to do. In 2021, not all that long ago, I couldn't say the last line. I couldn't say Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. So I had no idea who Buddha was. I didn't. And I said, I don't know what I'm saying when I say this. So I used to say things like, the way is unsurpassable. I vow to be and become. That was my little rewrite. So the next year, Red's retreat was on Enlightenment Unfolds, the Essential Teachings of Zen Master Dogen. And the Zen Master's Dance, A Guide to Understanding Dogen and Who You Are in the Universe by Jundo Kohen, and Zen Mind, Beginner Mind by Shunro Suzuki. So obviously now I'm starting to find out that Soto Zen exists, and I'm starting to realize that these ideas are making sense. They're resonating. They feel a bit like coming home. And I'm studying, I'm reading books, and a little while into this, and I thought to myself, maybe I should meet some real Buddhists. I mean, I'm hanging out with a bunch of Christians who are studying this, and I'm reading the books, but I don't really know what it means to actually be Buddhist. I'm like, are there people practicing this now? I'm like, I have no idea. So I Googled Soto Zen near me. And Valley Streams popped up. And that's when I came. And Doralee said, and Doralee was a fabulous introduction. We did the meditation. She invited me to stay. I had absolutely no idea what I was getting into. Zazen was great. I was used to meditating. The service was surprising. I had no idea what to expect, and absolutely none. And so the chanting, the bowing, I just remember thinking, where am I and what am I doing? And then that night, Jim did the Dharma talk, and it was fabulous. I don't know that I remember what he said, but I know that it was great. And it made me feel like I wanted to keep coming back, like maybe these were people who might believe this and think like I think. What I'm finding here today for me is that a difference is, while there are, I know Christians who have some similar ideas, and I could probably talk to them and interact with them in a way that would be nourishing and would feed me and help me feel closer to the divine, but the actual religion isn't doing that. What I find here at Valley Streams is that our actual practice that we do together is coming from those mystical sorts of ideas. And it seems like the way people are trying to live their lives is coming out of that. So I'm loving that. What I've kind of figured out is that, you know, I want to deepen my connection with the ultimate. And in order to do that, I really need a strong private practice at home on my own. I need to read good books and talk to other people about them. I need to listen to good teachers. I need some kind of ritual experience in my life. For a while, when I was trying to be on the journey without a community, that piece was missing. And so I enjoy that here with you. And then I need to have the connection to the people, like I'm starting to build with some of you, beyond just doing the rituals together and even beyond just book study together. So I feel like that's what I'm looking for. I want to work towards sort of living that bodhisattva vow. And the only way to do that is with a really solid connection to the divine. I turned 59 last week. And I'm sort of excited, like, what do my 60s, 70s, and 80s bring? I feel like there may be a bit more time and space to prioritize my spiritual journey. And here I am. That's it. Thank you for listening. Glad that's over. Obviously, the questions and comments.
Well, certainly we want to include that. People who would like to express something to you or ask you a question. Or,
I don't know what time it is.
We have a little bit of time. Sarah, was that your hand? No. Oh, okay.
Golly gee. That's an amazing, delightful story. That's one of the most inspiring way-seeking mind talks I've heard in quite a while. And I'm really thrilled to have heard it. Thank you very much. I'm so happy that you have brought all that experience and that emotion to this Sangha. It was fun riding with you.
Chatting in the car.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh, wow. That was so amazing to feel everything unfolding, you know, spiritually. It's like every juncture of your life, you took a spiritual turn. And it just seemed to be there from the beginning, that kind of enthusiasm, really, this love. You kept saying, I love this and I love that. And I guess what touched me amongst many things is that whenever you learned something, like a sentence or a phrase or whatever, you made it your own. Like you would say, well, I can't quite say it this way, but I'll maybe if I say it this way, then it will work for me. And so that was just very powerful because you stayed actively engaged. You didn't get caught up in, you know, well, this is the way you say it kind of thing. You took it in and found your own languaging that would keep it alive. And so I appreciate that very much.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Oh, Jim. I see that your hand's there, and hello.
I think I'm unmuted, is that right?
You are unmuted.
Okay. Well, I'm on a hotel in Memphis, Tennessee, and I have to kind of be in a quiet place where I can make this question. But I really liked your talk, and I was thinking about that feeling you had, I think, as a pretty young person, that when you thought about your relationship or access to God, I can reestablish that at any time. That's within my control, or my effort is not something that's random, but it's something that I can do or seek, can reach for. And I felt like that, I felt resonant with that. I just felt resonant with that spirit of, yes, this is something that's available to me, but I do have to bring myself to it, you know. And to me, so, you know, this is kind of a thing, the spirit that we try to cultivate, you know, in our practice is, yes, I can have this communion, as you talked about. This communion is within my reach, but I have to bring myself to it. And so I feel inspired by your understanding at that time, and presumably, you know, your understanding now too. Thank you very much.
Thank you.